From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Asan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Wake up! What is up, everybody? It's Wake Up WarChant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Coming up on today's show, observations galore, one-on-one, seven-on-sevens, 11-on-11 work. We detail every single snap. And baseball, huge bounce back. Get on your knees, Gators. Beck for mercy. Wake Up WarChant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. CPTallyBar.com website. Yep, that's right. 2475 Appalachie Parkway. Physical address. Trivia night went down last night. I hope you folks had fun getting crushed by Corey Clark's team. Hope you enjoyed the tacos as well. Go over there today for lunch, everybody, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and get 5 chicken wings and french fries for only $8.99. Best chicken wings in town. Do we know yet, Corey, if we can go all flats? Can we make the ask? Will they charge us extra? If we tell them that we're with War Chant, they might just go ahead and let it ride.
Oh, yeah. No, you can do all flats. They're used to it from me anyway. That's the only chicken wing I ever eat anymore, Aslan.
Okay. All right. We'll do that. Only $8.99 at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. Don't forget tomorrow, bingo night, 7 o'clock sharp. Get over there. Win some money. Have some fun. Meet some cool people. You can meet cool people as well on the internet over at WordChant.com. Our message board's always busy and active. Subscribe. You can look at our forums, get involved, but you can also read everybody else's forums. You can read the Gators crying about getting run ruled by the Noles last night in Jacksonville. Let's go. Or the fact that Miami's never going to be back. Enjoy all these things at warchant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. 5-star rating and review. Thumbs up, please, as well. Hey, Corey, shout out to our guy, Grumpy BK, loyal listener. He chimed in, so I just feel like I should give him some platform time here because he listened to us talk 13, 14 minutes about the whole receivers, distribution, targets. He feels like this year's roster, Corey, is going to produce results similar to 2012. No clear-cut number one. That team went 10-2, won the ACC, ended ranked 10th. We'll make the playoffs, but we probably don't win it. So he says, you know, EJ had 3,400 passing yards, 23 passing touchdowns, 10 picks, 300 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. I think that's what he's saying, or maybe that's what he's projecting DJ is going to have. But I guess he compares Devontae to Roydell, Chris Thompson to Toa Fili, James Wilder, it's either Kazire, Cam Davis, obviously EJ to DJ. Rashad Green, Malik Benson will be playing that role, 60 balls, 700 yards. Hakeem playing the role of Kelvin, 30 for 500. Ja'Kai will be playing the role of Tushaw, Kenny Raw, 30 and 500. Rodney Smith, maybe the portier guy. Nick O'Leary, 2012 Nick O'Leary production from Kyle Morlock. I'll take all that, I think, yeah?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Those are all very good players. I think that team threw the ball a little more than or they rode Chris Thompson a lot, too, until he got hurt. But, yeah, you know, I guess I could see some similarity. I guess the 2012 team had Greg Dent, too, who had a lot or at least a few catches that year. I just think this wide receiver rotation is a little deeper than that one. Certainly not better. I'm not saying they're better than Rashad and Kelvin and Kenny Shaw, but I do think there's more options in this wide receiver room than the 2012 one.
All right. Well, wide receivers, maybe a little bit of an uprising yesterday at practice. Mm-hmm. Nothing going on today. Scrimmage on Thursday. We don't get to watch it, but we get to speak to everybody coaching-wise afterwards. So let's dive into this, Corey. If we can maybe just talk about period three and just some one-on-one stuff before we dive into the 7-on-7 and the 11-on-11 and leave some ambiguity so people don't tune out too fastly. But what did you think about period three? I think a lot of people might get some conflicting information on a touchdown to Darion Williamson. From my vantage point, Josh Storms reacted with a very like, oh, man, that was so close. He didn't complete the catch. And I saw Mike Norvell screaming down and waving his hands like incomplete, incomplete. But it looked like a catch to me. And I think a lot of people reacted like it was a touchdown. But I had a tough drop, would have been a tough catch, but I listed it as a drop. Otherwise, man, that period three, they went red zone, right? Corey, they were, I don't know, maybe the 10-15 yard line, maybe.
No,
even closer
it was just straight. It was 2-point conversions.
Okay, I was 2-point. All right.
Yeah,
all right.
It was just 6 straight 2-point conversion plays.
Offense did pretty good, huh, Corey?
Yeah, they did all. They got them all except for the one you just mentioned, where it was an almost catch, and then they finished with five straight conversions, including a really nice catch from Deuce Spann, who had a nice practice in the corner of the end zone. Kind of a one-handed grab from DJ. Just really pretty. The whole play was pretty. Like, Earl Little had good coverage. It was just a better throw and a really good catch from Deuce. And I thought that was kind of how most of the practice was, Aslan. I thought – and it was all different guys. Like, Hakeem had a catch in that drill for a two-point conversion. Malik, Morlock, I think, Ja'Kai, and then the one I just talked about was Spann. Yep. That kind of goes to show you, I just keep naming names. And I didn't even name Destin Hill. I didn't name Jalen Brown, Brown.
Did you say Malik Benson?
I did say I meant to if I didn't. Okay. But, yeah, Malik Benson was in there. He caught one of the balls. So, yeah, man, there's just a lot of depth there, a lot of good depth. And it kind of went on for the rest of practice, too. The defense had its moments, too, including a couple of interceptions, some PBUs. But overall, man, you just – again, I wrote about it on the site. Like, you just get kind of struck, at least I did, Thursday or Tuesday more than any other day, just about the rise in roster talent and depth. In which, look, man, I don't expect LaWayne McCoy to play a lot this year, but he's a darn good receiver.
Mm-hmm.
He is a true freshman in his first spring, and he makes one or two eye-opening plays every practice. And I don't expect him to get on the field. Not because he's not going to be really good. He might be awesome at Florida State. But there's a lot of older guys that are pretty darn good, too, ahead of him. So you just see – I thought Brock Glenn had a really good day, and I don't expect him to be on the field unless DJ gets hurt. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just think the floor has been raised to the point where the backups – it could get to the point, if they're good enough again, where you look forward to seeing the backups play and what they could do with their time. Because I do think that these backups – this will be the best – this will be, I think, probably the best second string that Norvell has ever had.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of was trying to ask him that after practice because, you know, I think we all assume DJ's going to start in Ireland. I think that's a very safe assumption. But it's still a competition, I feel like. Like, Brock Glenn is bringing it, too. Like, he's not shrinking in the moment here. But I think over a long enough timeline here, DJ kind of takes over. But for so many years, man, like watching Drew Weatherford and Xavier Lee or, you know, DeAndre and James Blackman, like whenever there was these like legitimate quarterback sort of competitions, controversy, whatever you want to call them, you'd always kind of shelve it or table it with like, well, hey, you know, he ran with the ones today and, you know, he had a better completion percentage because he ran with the ones. And then like things would flip when the other quarterback would get to run with maybe the more talented wide receiving core. There doesn't feel like there is any drop off. And listen, I don't know if they're going to be as good as the 23 receiving core, right? Like, I don't know if they're going to be as productive or as dynamic as, like, you know, Keon and Johnny. But man, when DJ's in there and then Brock comes in, there's no drop off in who they're throwing the football to. And again, I don't know. Hopefully those guys will level up as well because you don't want them to stagnate to where they're at right now. But if those guys get better, man, then. Which we think they will, the receivers I'm talking about, they're in a really good position, just flush with talent.
Yeah, and I think you look at and again, it just struck me on Tuesday watching it. Like, I don't think whoever the starting running back is going to be better than Trey Benson or as good as Trey Benson. I don't think whoever the defensive end opposite Patrick Payton is going to be Jared Verse. But I do think and we talked about this on headlines a little bit on Tuesday, that there won't be this chasm between when your starting defensive ends go off the field and you replace them with other players, it won't be that chasm, that huge disparity that I thought in my mind affected the 2023 Florida State team. Now, look, they were still undefeated. So they withstood it. They were still very, very good on that side of the ball. But I just think when you look at the defensive end position, the defensive tackle position, wide receiver, like you mentioned, maybe the starters aren't quite as good, aren't as good as what you had last year at certain positions, but the depth and the backups are so much better, in my opinion, that it's not quite a wash. You don't lose Jared Verse, and then you're like, who cares? You just keep going. You're going to take a hit. But like we talked about, the combination of these defensive ends, you might still have a better defensive end room this year coming up in totality than you did last year. Even without Verse. If Peyton takes that next step, if Marvin is as good as we think he can be, if Lola Hea continues to look like this, and then Byron Turner Overdrive or somebody else makes a big jump, you know, I think the depth for the second stringers, which helps everything. I do want to put that into context, too. Like, people might think, well, why does it matter if your second string's good? If you stay healthy, they're not going to play a lot. Well, number one, they will. Second stringers play a lot. You're not going to stay healthy. But that's just football. But also the competition it breeds in practice, where if Malik Benson is working against the second team secondary, or maybe a better, if Azaria Thomas is working against the second string quote-unquote receiver, he can't just bully the kid into submission because he's just so much better than him. He can get burned by that kid too. Like, just the competition to be a starter is higher than it's ever been, but also just the competition between ones versus twos on opposite sides. It's never been like this, I don't think. That just struck me a lot. I keep saying that. Yeah. But it really did strike me on Tuesday how much that floor has been raised to where these practices are so highly competitive. They just are, man. They just are. And Brock Glenn helps too now. You mentioned him. He's not giving up anything. He's there to compete. He is bringing it every day. He has not gone quietly into that good night and just said, I'm going to be the second stringer, whatever. He's fighting. Now, he probably almost certainly will be the second stringer, but he's pushing DJ. And he's also given all these other guys valuable reps because he's been a good quarterback through 4 days, which gives the receivers valuable reps and the defense having to go against them valuable reps too.
You know, what struck me on Tuesday was – what was the movie? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yeah. With Rick Moranis, the great Rick Moranis.
Indeed, absolutely. Can't name anybody else that was in that movie, though.
I can't either. I can't remember. I don't even know who the wife was.
No, I don't know either.
I'll look that up.
But it struck me as like, dude, we shrunk the running back, kind of. Like, I asked you, I'm like, who's three?
Yeah.
Like, the running back, you're like, it's the freshman, Cam Davis. I'm like, he looks like Trey Benson, but just maybe like, and just was put in a compactor and lost a few inches. Like, he was shrunk down a little bit. But in terms of like burst and the physical kind of edge, he's going to be fun. I think he's going to be part of the mix too. Again, I don't know if the ceiling is going to be Trey Benson. I'm not saying, actually, no, it's probably not going to be the ceiling Trey Benson, but like the floor. I like how you mentioned that, because I think that's where things are, because when you roll out Roydell and you roll out Cam Davis and you roll out Toa Feely and you roll out Kaziah, you know, I think you might be in a better place than you were last year with, you know, Rodney Hill and Kaziah kind of trying to find his legs a little bit. So,
don't forget Toa Feely.
Yeah.
I don't know, because the combination of Toa Feely and Benson was pretty darn good. And I don't know the combination of Toa Feely and whoever is going to live up to that. But again, I think you're, you know, Kaziah can play. I don't think they're going to lose a whole lot. They are losing a home run hitter. But I think this offense has other home run hitters that last year's offense didn't, to make up for it. Like, that's just – I mean, Benson was their big play guy last year. You lost him. But I think now your big play guys are going to be out wide, or in the case of Jalen Lucas, a little bit of everything. But – overall, I think the running back room will be fine. Toa Feely's a big-time player. I shouldn't say big-time. He is a very good college running back. He's not Barry Sanders or Adrian Peterson, but he's a very good college running back. And you almost forget about him because he's just been here so long, and he's just part of the deal. He's just part of the program now. But he's going to be a huge part of this offense. But, you know, is he a home run threat? I guess he's had big 70-yard touchdowns. He obviously had the long run against Louisville, but he's had other wheel route touchdowns and stuff. I just think that overall, I wouldn't go as far to say the running back room will be as good, or you're not going to miss a beat when you lose somebody like Trey Benson, but the totality of the playmakers on offense, there's just more of them than there was last year.
Let's go to one-on-ones, Corey. The first one that I looked up and saw was Brock Glenn taking a shot deep downfield to Ja'Kai, who was covered by Azaria, and Ja'Kai coming down with the catch. That might have been the best connection out there. I thought there was a really good route ran by Hakeem. He was getting grabbied by Greedy Vance. He was getting all sorts of jammed up, but was able to go up and catch the ball that was thrown by DJ Uiagalelei. And you told me to look and pay attention to number 6, Jaylen Brown, the LSU transfer. And I'm like, all right, I'll try to. Man, he had two plays in the one-on-ones. One of them was a throw from Luke Kromenhawk that I don't know if Luke underthrew him or just by his sheer smoothness and effortless running ability. Look, he almost like overran it, but he slowed up and he made a catch, and it was a walk on, but still, just the body control,
correct
awareness.
It doesn't even matter who. I mean, it does matter who the opponent was, but what you're looking at, in, you saw it perfectly. It's the body control. It's running full speed, stopping on a dime, and also high pointing it. That was really impressive. He's been an impressive guy the last couple practices.
And then there was a second rep that he ran in one-on-ones where he did a double move, and the cornerback, who was another different walk-on, was on him the entire time. Like I was really impressed. But after like the second move of the double move, he put the brakes on and just, I don't even think he touched the defensive back, but just by the sheer way that so on a double move, like you run, you stop, and then you start accelerating again. Well, when he stopped again for the second time, the DB just, it looked like there was a force field around Jaylen Brown that just propelled him away from him. Just, I guess that's the way he just runs routes, are just so crisp in the way he's able just to, you know, chop his feet and stop on a dime was really impressive. So he had two big catches in one-on-one. So that was nice to see, because he's somebody I have not nearly talked enough about. Again, only 4 days, but you saw that early on, so tip my cap
to you. Did you mention Destin?
I did not. No, tell me
so
about Destin.
So the first two plays that I saw in one-on-ones were, the very first one they ran was Destin basically on a go against Jabril Rawls, redshirt freshman corner, a scholarship guy, and Destin Hill just sprinted right past him, because Destin Hill is really fast, and Brock Glenn dropped in about a 50 or 60 yard throw that would have been a 95 yard touchdown because he wasn't going to catch Destin. Then two reps later, Ja'Kai Douglas does the exact same thing to Azariah Thomas. The exact same thing, the exact same throw, the exact same catch, and Azariah is really good and has been good. It was good on Tuesday aside from this play. Again, Ja'Kai is almost like the Toa Feely of the receivers. You just forget he's around until he goes and does something like he did on Tuesday. He also made a great touchdown catch in 7-on-7, like a really contested kind of back shoulderish catch against Earl Little. That he just goes and makes plays, man. And he's a forgotten guy, kind of. Not forgotten, just by me. I should just speak for myself. He's a guy. He's a taken for granted guy. He's just out there doing what he does. I always think it's telling that the shots downfield are so much more than they've been. And I asked Norvell about it on Tuesday, just about if you tweak the offense because of the speed and what you have out wide compared to last year. And he said, you always want to coach with speed. He goes, I've had teams that have had a lot of speed before, and those are usually fun offenses to be a part of. Because you can tell, I think, it's just a part of the plan. Is they aren't going to have these speed guys just running six-yard hitches. They are going to try to blow the top off of defense a lot. And they got the guys that can do it, because in one-on-ones, I think they completed four – this is just abnormal. I want you to give people the context of this too. They had, I think, four catches of at least 45 to 50 yards in one-on-ones.
It was fun. It was fun, Corey. It was like
but
an
that's
and
not
one
what happens
almost.
A lot, right?
Yeah,
they don't typically do that. We've watched how many of these Norvell practices? 100?
Right.
I've never seen that many deep shots completed in one-on-ones that we saw on Tuesday by four different guys.
Yeah. Just to add, wrap up things from my side of things on the one-on-ones, Corey. Maybe don't get all that excited about Brian Corden, but he's still out there competing at tight end. Yeah. He cooked one of the defensive backs that they're probably going to rely on heavily.
Great move.
It was brilliant. It was really
Jeff
nice.
Cameron, I was standing next to Cameron when he did. He's like, oh, man, wow. Because I was looking down typing something in my phone, and he's like, oh, Brian Courtney just made a heck of a move. Yeah. That was a really good route. That was a great route. And I'm like, all right.
Luke Kromenhawk had a nice deep connection to Deuce Spann. We'll talk about him a little bit later on. And Ashlyn Barker, defense didn't go quietly into the night. I don't know if he jumped the route. I don't know if he picked it off or not.
He didn't.
But
he batted it down.
Yeah. So
he did get an interception later on in practice, though, to close out the entire practice. Was an 11-on-11 in the red zone. Maybe the ball was at the 8 or 10 or 12, something like that. He intercepted one in the corner of the end zone off Kromenhawk. Really nice play. Really nice break on the ball. To leap to high point and then get his feet down. So he missed an interception earlier. It's good to see him come back and make that play. Also, what's cool, again, what's so cool about this team so far through four practices is Azarié gives up that long pass to Ja'Kai. The very next rep they have is the same guys against each other. Azarié is in his hip pocket the whole time, bats it down for a PBU. Almost gets a pick. That's competition. Yeah, that's what it breeds. You want to see those guys that bounce back like that. We know Azarié is really good, but it's still good to see that kind of stuff from all these guys. If they have a bad rep, they come right back and have a good one.
We'll get back to practice observations, but did want to talk about the comments from Coach Norvell after practice in terms of injuries. So we can talk about these openly and freely now that the coach has revealed it to everybody. But Robert Scott and Joshua Farmer, they're both going to be out for the entire spring.
Yeah.
But they're expected to be ready to go either when off-season program starts up or at least for preseason camp.
He said, I mean, he was pretty specific to say summer workouts.
Summer workouts. Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Jamari Howard, that was a guy that looked really good in day one and just moved around really well. I'm like, all right, this guy's going to be a fun, you know, sort of product to see how he's able to develop. He unfortunately sustained an injury at some point during practice here, and he too will miss the entire spring, but unfortunately it sounds like his rehabilitation is going to cut into the regular season as well. We don't have a firm timeline on that, but Norvell did sound a little bit more concerned about his availability because it's obviously going to cut into the season. But again, Scott Farmer, so if you ask us about how they're looking, we can actually tell you now they're not practicing because they're healing up and dealing with whatever they're dealing with that we're not going to specify. But I will say, I mean, I don't know, can I say, like, Robert Scott's out there. I haven't seen Josh Farmer.
I've seen him. Yeah, okay, he's out there. Okay. I stood behind him today. I had to move around because I couldn't see what was going on the field. Yeah, he's out there.
Large human being. They play so much football, though, Corey, not a really big deal, I would assume, right?
No, I mean, it would be good to get your O-line, your starting O-line some reps, but really, do you need them in March? I mean, all those guys, Robert Scott's played 100 games. Well, probably not that many. But I would guess literally probably 45 games of college football. All those guys, you know, a lot of those guys have Byers, Washington, Maurice, and him. So, no, I don't think it's the end of the world if he misses spring, especially if it gets him right, like really right. For this season, because he was not right at all last season. It would be nice for him to be fully healthy, and let's see how that impacts the entire starting line if you have a healthy and good Robert Scott at left tackle.
He's played 2,082 snaps.
Golly.
That's a lot.
It is.
That is a lot. VitaminEnergy.com, promo code WarChampBogo, WarChamp, B-O-G-O. Buy one item, get one free. I was on a different nutrition and supplement website the other day and had a BOGO code heavily promoted on their website. I'm like, oh, cool, let me do that. I'll order some protein. But it was buy one, get one 50% off. Boo. Vitamin Energy don't do you dirty like that. Buy one, get one free with the promo code WarChampBOGO, WarChamp, B-O-G-O, VitaminEnergy.com, energy with benefits. Vitamins and nutrients, 260 milligrams of all-natural caffeine, powering you through the day and improving your mood. Improving your focus, all these sorts of things, clinically proven, clinically tested. After 7 days of use, folks in this trial said that the shots significantly improved their energy levels, lowered their fatigue, lowered their brain fog, improved their mood, and helped with their problems with focus and concentration. After 7 days of using the vitamin energy shots, 85.7% of the participants agreed that vitamin energy shots were effective at boosting their energy. 7 days after that, 14 days in total of this trial, 89.3% of the participants agreed that the vitamin energy shots are effective at boosting their energy. Clinically tested, clinically proven. Buy one, get one free. What are you waiting for? VitaminEnergy.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, let's pick it back up then, Corey. 7-on-7. This was kind of the start of the defense coming maybe out of their shell, walking a little bit taller. It felt like defense seemed to be, at least in the part where they were near midfield, so there was a lot more leverage behind them. They went to a 7-on-7 in the red zone on the 15-yard line we can get to here in a minute or two. But when they went to 7-on-7, that's kind of, it felt like the defense started to find their footing and competing a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, Azariah on the very first play almost had an interception of Brock Glenn, like made a great break on the ball. I think it was to Portier, maybe Williamson, one of the vets. It was really good coverage, and he locked him up and almost had an interception just doing what he does. And, yeah, I'm looking at my notes. The biggest play, the best play, was Justin Crier.
Yeah.
With what amounted to a pick six.
Yeah, man.
With really good coverage on Toa Feely and what would have been a pick six. We talked about DJ not checking down a lot. He actually tried to take it that time. And Justin Crier said, no, not today, buddy.
No.
That might have worked in Corvallis. That's not working down here in Tallahassee. So that was cool to see. And they had, you know, the offense had some good moments too. But
yeah,
by
DJ,
and large.
Yeah, DJ had a good throw to Malik Benson. And then he also had a good throw to Hakeem, I thought, in that 7-on-7.
Yeah, back-to-back. Yeah, he had back-to-back where he completed two to Hakeem for about 40 yards total, and then another one to Malik Benson for 12 yards. So in one stretch, he was 3-for-3 for about 52 yards. Really good plays, and he hit Destin. The play right before that is, again, something that I was telling Jeff when we were watching it, right before the pick six that Crier had. It's one of those where they're not open right away. Nobody's open right away. And I've watched all these Norvell practices where if the guys aren't open right away, if you're doing the quarterback clock in your head, you're like, okay, well, it's been 5 seconds. I wouldn't still be looking downfield. I'm just going to put the ball under my arm and jog towards the line of scrimmage. They'll blow the play dead. That's how it's been going on since we've been watching Norvell practices with Jordan Travis and A.J. Duffy, Rodemaker, whoever. Well, DJ doesn't do that. When they're not open right away, he kind of moves a little bit to his right or left or whatever he's doing, but he's still looking downfield. He's still looking downfield, and then it gives these receivers a chance to practice the scramble drill. And so he hit Destin Hill on like a 17-yard gain, well at like 7 seconds after the ball had been snapped. That's a interminable amount of time. But DJ Uiagalelei moves well. It is hard to bring down, and there will be plays throughout the course of a season where he does break containment, and he is all alone on the right side of the field, and he is still looking downfield, and instead of running for 8 yards, he might be able to hit a 50-yard throw if the receivers learn to work with him on these scramble drills. And so I just think that's a nice little wrinkle they've added. I don't even know if they've added it. I meant to ask Norvell, and I forgot to. I don't know if they've added it or DJ just does that. Yeah. But I really think it's good because Destin Hill hasn't played a lot of college football. And it's good for him to get on the same page and learn how to do a scramble drill. And he made a really nice throw to Destin right there, right before the, obviously right before the pick six. Yeah.
All right, let's move to the 7-on-7 part where they were on the 15-yard line. I thought each quarterback had a really great throw. Brock's first throw was to Ja'Kai for a touchdown. Luke Cromanhawk, his final throw, I think the final throw of that period, where again, 7-on-7, 15-yard line going into the end zone. I think it was a really good throw, even better catch. Jaylen Brown, I think, was sliding on his knees, catching it at the front pylon in the corner, and that was a really good way to end that period and really got Norvell excited. But I thought maybe the best throw, I think, of the entire day was DJ's touchdown pass in that 7-on-7 period where they're on the 15-yard line.
To Toa Feely, right?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll let Corey color a little bit better, but I mean, Toa Feely was bracketed. There was a guy underneath, there was a guy up top, and DJ just showed the right amount of touch and pace and fitted it perfectly. And then that, to me, was the best throw of the day.
Oh, it absolutely was. Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, that was. There's no doubt about it. It was. He was not open. He was not. I mean, it wasn't a bad decision, but you have to put it in a. It was a tight window throw, and you know, Toa Feely's a great pass catcher for a running back, but that's a tight throw, and it's a perfect throw. And it's just the confidence he threw it with, the timing, the rhythm. Yeah, correct. I thought that was the best throw anybody made probably the whole day.
Yeah. Let's go to 11-on-11 when they were closing things down during practice. Real quick aside here, we have seen Adam Fuller and Mike Norvell with walkie-talkies in their hand, not headsets, but rather walkie-talkies. And I've wondered aloud, I wonder if that's them communicating to the quarterbacks or whoever's got the green dot, whoever's got the headset or the microphone or the speaker inside their helmet. And it's definitely them communicating on those things, Corey. There was a play in this 11-on-11 period where Cromanhawk, I think it was Cromanhawk, threw the ball away. And as soon as, you know, he throws the ball away, the defense is celebrating because they get a stop. But I could hear Norvell, who's right next to me on this walkie-talkie, being like, great decision. That was a great decision. And he starts talking to him about, you know, the next play to get ready for. So that I mean, that's pretty cool, right? Because, you know, you can look over to the sideline during a game and maybe get like a head nod or a clap like, hey, man, you're good. but probably like to hear him tell you as soon as a play is over, like, hey, man, like, good job on that one, or hey, you missed this part of it. That's going to be a really interesting thing to see how it plays out through the course of the season, because you feel like this coaching staff is so well organized and so talented that this just gives them like another edge to sharpen and hone their play calling and everything they do. So I just, you know, wanted to kind of add that to the conversation.
And I don't even think the play calling is one thing. I still think most of their play calling will be the guys on the sidelines holding up signs. Yeah. But you are able to communicate with your quarterback, and there are going to be head coaches or play callers. They're going to have to like put a governor on themselves. Like, don't talk too much.
Right.
Don't be like, how I would be. I would be like, man, that's a really good decision. You made a really nice decision there. But golly, that last throw before that, I still can't get over. What were you thinking? you've got to like just be in the moment. Don't criticize or praise too much, because you've got to get to the play, and then maybe one little like, hey, and watch the safety on this. But even that could be too much information.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to fill their head like, hey, look at that corner blitz now. We've talked about it. Because then all of a sudden he's looking for the corner blitz, and you're in his head too much. So that communication right before the snap with a 19-year-old or 20, you know, I know DJ's older than that. I'm thinking down the line like next year. Yeah. Because the NFL quarterbacks,
you Bill Self over here, you're just worrying about next season already.
Right, exactly right. No, yeah, exactly. I'm thinking about like DJ's, you know, he's 23 years old probably. But you know, the NFL quarterbacks that deal with their coaches in their ears all the time are men. But you know, whoever's the quarterback next year probably hasn't dealt with that a lot. You just want to, you don't want to give them too much to think about and criticize too much or praise too much. You kind of just want, I think, just to be the communication about the next play. Like what you said, good job, good decision. Now here, let's do this.
Yeah.
But not, don't fill them too much with, okay, now it's 3rd and 8, so expect pressure up the middle. I mean, I guess that's the right way to do it, but what if they don't bring pressure up the middle? Yeah, anyway, I just think that's something. They're all going to, all these coaches are going to have to police themselves, because they're going to want to talk so much.
So, to the 11-11 period observations now. First drive was DJ Uiagalelei at the helm.
Yep.
That was a really nice drive. The first two plays, Jalen Lucas is just electric, everybody. And I think you and Tom had a good conversation about while we were waiting to talk to Norvell. There's going to be some limitations, everybody. He's not going to get 70 targets. He's not going to catch 45 passes. He's not going to be running down the sideline.
The catch radius isn't enormous, folks.
But the staff is so creative in how they draw things up that they'll find ways to get him the football. And when they do in space, man, it's lights out. It, like, scoreboard's changing, or at least the down marker's changing at an absolute minimum. So first play, 11-on-11 DJ to him was a really nice
40. I had it for 40 yards.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yep.
And then next play after that, that was probably the biggest run. It was the biggest run of the day. No, Corey, to Zay Holmes?
Samuel Singleton had a couple of nice runs. He had a 40-yarder in the early 11-on-11, and then I think he had a 25-yarder later in this section. But, yeah, this was Keziah from 42 yards out, touchdown run, down the blocked really well. And then Shaheem, who had been able to catch, or not catch, but angle out Lucas, didn't have the angle for this one. And Keziah can move, man. Shaheem's fast. He was fast enough to angle out Jalen Lucas on one play. He's probably tired because the very next play he's having to do it again. But Keziah's fast enough to get by the safety and get in the end zone. So, yeah, that was a really impressive back-to-back plays for the offense.
Otherwise, I had a good throw from Brock Glenn to Malik Benson, and also a nice play design that he hooked up with Kyle Morlock in that 11-on-11 period.
Yep, that about and the two on defense that I noticed out of that period, other than the Barker interception that we already mentioned, was Blake Nicholson got an interception on a pass that was deflected at the line by heavy pressure, but I could not see which defensive lineman got him. I'm gonna guess it was Peyton, just because all he does is bat balls, but I don't know that for sure. It could have been Marvin, but I know like two plays later, the next play, Daryl Jackson just wrecked a running play. And then the very next play, he got a sack by wrecking the interior of the Florida State offensive line. Like, I can't remember the quarterback was. It was either Glenn or Cromanhawk. They had no time to throw because the guard was in their lap. Because Daryl Jackson is a man-child out there.
Yeah, and then wrapping it up, just the only other, like, lone observation to add. I just, you know, Sean Murphy, I again, when I saw him at Tour of Duty, to me, he just seemed like a bygone player, like a relic. Like this kind of body type and you know, movement doesn't seem to be what you see out of linebackers, and I don't know where he would fit in. But I think this is like 2 days now where I've seen him diagnose screen plays and just gobble up much smaller, much faster guys in wide open space. So
yeah, that was a cool thud, the one he had on Tuesday. And then DJ Lundy had one on our man Lucas out in the flat. Had a really good read on that. Yeah, that was good to see, because those are big dudes having to guard not big dudes, very quick guys. And on those particular plays anyway, Murphy and Lundy both had exceptional hits, contact. They're not bringing these guys to the ground necessarily, but it is thudding with an intent, an impact, and both of them were impressive on those two plays anyway.
MyBookie.ag, promo code WARCHANT. That's it. It's WARCHANT. Instant cash deposit bonus. Tomorrow we're back at it, everybody. The tournament starting back up, Sweet 16 style. Only two lines I see of right now, first half lines. Arizona favored by 4 over Clemson. And San Diego State getting 6.5 against UConn. Man, San Diego State makes things kind of muddy, kind of gross. I don't know, though, man. I like UConn a lot. I think I'll go ahead and say that UConn will be up by at least 7.5. And I think Clemson will be within 4 at half against Arizona. Make your picks. Go to mybookie.ag. When you sign up for the first time, use the promo code WARCHANT. Get that instant cash deposit bonus. Promo does require $50 minimum deposit and rollover requirement of one-time deposit total, including bonus for withdrawal. For full terms and conditions, visit mybookie.ag/about-us.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, man, let's talk baseball, Corey.
All right.
I don't think it could have been any better. I don't think a 14-0 win would have been any better for Florida State. The 14-3 final over Florida in Jacksonville. You're the visiting team, so you get top of the innings. First inning, Florida State comes out strong. Cam Smith, James Tibbs, Jaime Ferrer, back-to-back-to-back one-out singles. And then Daniel Cantu, a guy that you've been talking about, really excited about what he can be. And I don't want to say I haven't been high on him. I probably haven't given him enough, spotlight that he certainly deserves after what he did on Tuesday night. But he hits a bases clearing double. So Florida State jumps out to a 3-0 lead. And then the bottom half of the inning starts. And the Gators, leadoff batter walks. Second batter gets a single. Caglione hits a 3-run home run. And just like that, you're tied up and you've got no outs. Andrew Armstrong starts the game. And you're like, this is a bullpen sort of night, sort of game. This is going to get ugly. It's going to be just an absolute 14-13 final. And hopefully you can hang on and find a way. But that's not the way it played out. Florida State, their offense elite in every aspect, absolutely shone on Tuesday night in Jacksonville. And then this bullpen, this much maligned bullpen, shout out to my God, John Abraham, took up for you.
Yep.
3 1/3 innings. No hits, no runs, 5 strikeouts. If you were watching this on the SEC Network Plus, everybody, we were treated to the Florida Gator radio announcing team, and they were so salty about John Abraham throwing all these breaking pitches. Like, he's going to throw his arm out if he keeps doing this. Well, he did it all night long and kept the Gators off the board. And then Brennan Oxford came in, and he needs to be your left-handed guy that you can rely on. He goes 1 2/3 the rest of the way to finish it off. Joe Charles gets credited with the win. At no point were they in, I guess, jeopardy, obviously, here, Corey, 14-3, but, and they mercy ruled it. So I would like to see them get 27 full outs, but to get punched in the nose that quickly in that sort of fashion in the first inning, but just to slam the door, does that give you a good sense of confidence, or at least what the culture, the makeup of this team is?
So, you know, and we talked about it earlier in the week, Aslan. It's not like the bullpen hadn't had success. They had just been the biggest reason that Florida State had won the previous four games. You know, the three against Notre Dame, where the offense on Saturday and Sunday scored four runs. They won both of those games. And then the Tuesday game, they won 1-0 with a bullpen game. They didn't even have a starting pitcher. So we knew the bullpen had had its moments. But then what I wondered about, after such a horrific beating in Clemson, like that baseball is such a mental game. And how are you going to bounce back from those kind of outings? And I know we're talking about basically three guys. But Oxford, Abraham, and Charles were all part of those meltdowns. Mm-hmm. And so you just wondered how the team would respond after just a diabolical way to lose a series. I mean, it was just nuts that happened, that you blew an 8-1 lead in a ninth inning, and then the next game blew an 11-2 lead in the sixth inning. To come back and play another top 10 team away from home, I know it's a neutral site game, but away from home, and then you immediately give up a 3-run homer for them to tie the game, and you're like, well, here we go again. And then, nope, Charles, Abraham, and Oxford, I just looked it up, they pitched 7 innings and allowed 1 hit and struck out 11 in 7 innings. Man, that just said, I just think that says something, certainly maybe about the makeup of those guys, but maybe just the makeup of the team itself, that they can go out there after humiliating efforts the previous two games, to go out there and beat a good Florida team in run rule fashion and just bludgeon their pitchers to death. That's just really impressive, man. It's one game, I get it. Baseball's 54 games, but man, that's really impressive for them to bounce back like that.
Well, against a Florida team that just beat the defending national champions in Baton Rouge and run ruled them in one of those wins.
Right.
Absolutely huge bounce back. We're going to get to talk to Link later today, so check out warchant.com and check out our YouTube page. We'll have that full interview up, but really curious to hear him talk about what he thinks he might have gained or learned from his team, because it is one game, but just to start off that shaky again and, you know, just say, no, it's not going to be like this again. It's really super impressive. Again, this offense is nuts. Cantu was 3-for-4 with 5 ribbies. Faroe, 2-for-5. Both those were home runs, 5 RBIs as well. Max Williams had an RBI. Cam Smith had an RBI. James Hibbs had an RBI. Dinges had an RBI. This offense is fantastic. If the bullpen can firm up, which I think they will, again, I'm really confident they will, this is a really exciting team to think about their future, man. And they get, what, Louisville this week in a weird...
Louisville Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Another game without an error. Now, there were 13 strikeouts, but of the 11 other outs, not an error. The balls that were put in play, they didn't make an error. What they had, 3 doubles and 3 home runs. They just they struck out 3 times as an offense. With that slugging, with all those hits, with all those power bats, they still only struck out 3 times. Even their outs are loud outs. I think their last out they made was a fly out to the track and right. Jackson West had a nice game, and he's not even the everyday catcher. It's just, we know what the offense is, and I think we know what the defense is. And now, weirdly, I kind of think we know what the makeup of the team is. And I think maybe it was on Headlines. All my podcasts, they run together, Aslan. I was actually encouraged by how they bounced back over the weekend, despite the end results of those games. Because when you lose your first game in run rule variety, in run rule fashion, to then come back and have an 8-1 lead in the ninth inning the next day against the number 4 team in the country on the road, I feel like that says a lot about the talent, but the mental makeup. Now, obviously, the bullpen imploded. Even after that horrific loss, one of the worst regular season losses you could ever possibly see, the next day they're up 11-2 again. Like, they're just – it seems to me – and I know the bullpen melted down again, but the offense is relentless.
Yes.
And I feel like the mental makeup of the team is pretty darn impressive. Just throw strikes, as Jeff was saying on Headlines. If you just throw strikes, the way the defense can play behind you, it's this team, that's just really impressive. That's just really impressive to bounce back from that series and play your bitter rival that you've had a history now of 15 years, essentially, at least, yeah, basically about 15 years of losing to, and to come out and run rule them.
Yeah, man.
After their big series win, they got all that momentum, and you go and humiliate them in front of 3,000 of their fans. In a really cool environment. I hope anybody listening to this, I hope one time you go watch this game in Jacksonville. I still think it should be a home-and-home series. I'm not saying it shouldn't, but the Jacksonville part of this thing is cool. You've obviously infused the roster with talent, with a terrific lineup, and you can pick up the ball. All that's really, really good. It's all important, very important. But also to have that mental ability to just shake that off, because it's baseball and you better have that ability, because if you can't, you're not going to last long as a baseball player and your team isn't going to be very good. If you let one loss or one bad outing, one bad game, one bad weekend turn into another embarrassment 2 days later because you can't pick yourself up off the mat, well, that's trouble. But this team is just – maybe it's just too talented offensively for that to ever happen.
I don't know. I like the sound of
that. Cam Smith had a quiet 2-for-5
yeah.
with a double off the fence that was probably hit 200 miles an hour. You know, Tibbs, only 3 hits. You know, it's just on and on and on. Like, Faroe is the one guy in the lineup in Clemson that didn't hit a home run. And so then he goes the next day and hits 2.
He heard you. He heard you on the show the other day.
He and Cantu both had only one home run on the season coming into Tuesday, and then they both hit 2. Oh, no, Cantu hit 1. Yeah. But he hit his second one of the season, and then our man Faroe hit 2, and had 5 ribbies. It's a good lineup, man. It's a good lineup.
Yeah. I think Cam Smith that showing that he's batting .444. I think the broadcast team said he's batting .400 with runners on base this year.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's really good.
I'm glad I didn't have to listen to that broadcast team, by the way. Holy moly, that sounds like it was a night. So they were the Florida radio team?
Yeah, yeah.
Who was calling the game on the radio for Florida? Nobody?
Them. They just synced up.
It was a simulcast?
Yeah, they like synced up the radio broadcast to the video feed that the SEC Network Plus was filming.
Well, then I think you could forgive them a little, right? Because they wouldn't
But you still
you're right. They have to know that they have to know that the game is on the SEC, that people can watch it online. But I'm sure they're thinking the only people listening to us are Gator fans, so we can talk like this about this game, not thinking, oh, there's probably thousands upon thousands of Florida State fans interested in this game and watching it. And you come off as such a homer.
Yeah.
But, you know, Florida State doesn't have that problem.
Nope.
Lou Allen, Lulu, he ain't doing that. He hates the Gators more than anybody. He grew up playing football against them. But yeah, he's not as as one-sided as these guys appeared to be.
I think it was the fifth inning, and I think Florida State was up like at that point. I think 6-3, and they struck out. And the way he called the strikeout was just like, "And see ya." He retires that Seminole. It was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
he's like, "You're busting out your, you know, the 27th out of a game that clinches a series against the top 5 team or something."
Yeah.
Like, to do a Tuesday midweek game when you're losing to your in-state rival. But hey, they can think about that on the bus ride back to Gainesville. So
yeah, it's a toughie, huh? It's a toughie to lose to. So when's the last time Florida State beat them in a series?
I don't know, but I think they said that was the first time Florida State beat Florida in Jacksonville since 2015.
Oh, sweet Moses. Come on. Anyway, but hey, they've won the series.
Yeah, we did.
And look, we don't like this crazy every 2 week midweek series against your arch rival, but these are big wins at the end of the season, especially because Florida only goes up when they lose. So that's their 10th loss now, so they'll be ranked number 1, I'm sure, by the time next week rolls around. But these are big losses, are big wins. These are big RPI wins for Florida State, and they could use a couple after blowing the 2 that they blew last weekend in Clemson. Just, again, really impressive bounce back, man. That's good to see. And if you don't have tickets, come out and watch this baseball team.
Yes.
Just to watch them hit. I mean, and then watch the Leiter and Arnold are really good. They play good. They're just a fun team to watch play. They don't strike out a ton. They hit the ball very hard everywhere, and they pick it up and don't embarrass you on the bases. It's a good product, really good product.
A lot of games between now and then, but they'll finish it out against Florida in Tallahassee at Hauser on April 9th, Tuesday. So
come and get some. Come and get some, Sully.
Come and get some recruiting news over at warchant.com. Matt Lasser caught up with a 5-star offensive tackle, Josh Petty, who was on campus yesterday watching practice. So Get the latest on all things recruiting over at warchant.com. We'll have a Renegade Express mailbag thread up on the forum, so jump in there. We'll record that at some point, and that'll be your Thursday pod. And then Friday will be our thoughts on the words that we hear after speaking to Coach Norvell and company after the scrimmage on Thursday. So we got you covered. Jeff Cameron's got you from 1 to 3 o'clock. Tom Lang might be in studio with him, I think.
He's in studio with us on Tuesday for headlines.
Tom's got trench observations as well. Ira's going to crank some stuff out. Corey's got stuff up on the site. It's football season. It's baseball season, softball season. We'll see what goes on the portal for the basketball team. It's always some season. We're always getting you covered over at warchant.com. Thanks for listening to Wake Up, War Champ, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.